When was the last time you refreshed your bedding? Sleep cooler with Avocado's naturally breathable, certified organic sheets. Choose from GOTS-certified organic cotton, linen, or hemp, all made-safe certified to the highest standards of non-toxic safety, delivering the ultimate in luxury, sustainability, and style, and a deeper, more restorative sleep. Join Avocado's mission to be one of the world's most sustainable brands at avocadomattress.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is so early. Hey, dearest readers, welcome to a no bra morning episode of Truly Darkly Creepily.
It's chaos.
Sorry, I'm like still trying to get all my bips and bops together.
Oh my God. We get your bips and bops together. I'm from a bed. You're from a bedroom. And I think like, hi, I don't know when you're listening to this, dearest readers, but you know what? Cuddle in. Grab a little snack.
Cuddle in.
Get a little cozy. So wonderful.
Cold. Why is it cold?
Why is it cold? Didn't you just make it?
I might have to go heat it. I did like a thing where I was like trying to read my notes while I was making the coffee, and we got a pour over, so I'd pour a little and then I'd forget, and then I'd go in and pour a little more and then I'd forget. So over the course of the last hour I made myself coffee, and now it's really cold.
Oh, Quinn, I'm sorry. Can you do me a favor?
Yeah.
Can you go heat it up for yourself right now?
Oh, I'd love to. Thank you for saying
please
that.
Please go heat it up.
Sometimes I just need a boost. I'll be right
go
back.
Go get a boost.
Okay.
Oh my God. Okay. Let's
thank
get
you for your patience.
Oh my God! Thank
I
you
think
to the
this
microwave.
Is make a big difference
hey, thank you to
me.
Madame Curie for inventing the microwave. I don't know if she did it. I know she invented, or she discovered radioactivity. I don't know what Madame Curie, Marie Curie, did, but you know what? I'm gonna say give her credit for the microwave.
Sure, I'll do
I'll
it.
I'll do it. I'll give a woman credit
thanks,
for something.
Marie.
Thanks, Marie. Really appreciate your work. Oh my gosh, I gotta tell you. So I went to the party on Monday.
Tell me.
I went to
tell
the embassy.
Everything.
Okay. Here's the most amazing thing. Okay, so I walked in. It was a little underwhelming. Okay, I said it. Let's move on. Here's why it was a little underwhelming. I walked in, and they give you, like, a little map, and I have it. Don't worry, I have it. And I think I sent you this picture, but essentially, it was a series of food trucks in a circle. And because mm-hmm. we were celebrating the beautiful country that once was America, the beautiful country of which we are from. The country is beautiful. The people, the politics pass. Well, the people are great. The politics pass. Anyway, I don't have to get into it. You know how I feel. Sorry to the person who unfollowed us because we talk about politics. Let's move on. I went to the embassy and the food truck situation, here's what food was there on offer. Okay.
Tell me.
Five Guys. Shake Shack. Whole Foods. Domino's Pizza. Chipotle.
God,
I mean, I'm gonna, and then of course there was
you dressed
like,
up for that.
I dressed up, and I had a great blue dress. I got new shoes. I had blisters from it, but I figure, well, I'll talk about that later. That being said, they had like, you can have wine and beer. You could have they had like a Coors Light tent. They had a Corona tent. They had I of course went to the tequila tent to get a Paloma because I'm an adult. They had like a gin beam. They had a gin. They had a gin thing. And so we're there and we're hanging out, and the lines were so long that I got to two food stuff. And we were like in line for Shake Shack because KK doesn't eat gluten or doesn't eat meat. And so we're like, oh, you'll get fries and I'll get a burger. We go in, they're just selling burger. They're just giving out burgers. And so like she left fucking hungry, which is like blasphemy. Crazy. It's so crazy. It's so much food. But like not, we went to the Whole Foods. They gave us a little thing of gazpacho, a couple of cheeses, which one of the cheeses they gave you was like a Swiss kind of vibe, which I think is bullshit. If there's a charcuterie board, I don't want a Swiss. I don't want an Emmental.
Nobody wants a Swiss cheese.
I want a hard cheese. Get I want a soft cheese. And they did that. And I want like a crunchy cheddar. Those are the cheeses that I want in a cheese board.
Let it be known.
Right? So that being said, it was like time for the musical guest.
Oh, that was going to be Taylor.
It was not going to be Taylor. My mom was fully convinced it was Taylor and has convinced everyone in my life that it's going to be Taylor. And so everybody's like, who's the magical guest? Who's the musical guest? Who's the musical guest? Who's the musical guest? So the ambassador gets up and like gives a little speech. They do like a presenting of the guard.
Macklemore.
It's worse. And by the way, Macklemore would be great, but Macklemore just came out with a song that's pretty politically motivated, that's pretty progressive, and so I just don't think the ambassador would have him on, unfortunately.
Okay. I'm just trying to picture him. Like, who's the celebrity going to be?
So they're like, listen, this group has sold out stadiums all across the world. Okay? They're here. They're huge. You know them. You love them. Please welcome Take That. KK and I look at each other and we go, who?
Who?
Wait, I should find a song. I should find a song. I go, wait, what? Legitimately, people start howling, freaking out. Because I guess a lot of the people there are British. People start fucking flipping their shit. Okay, it.
Who's Take That?
Okay, well, was once five. Take That is now three members. One of which was formerly Robbie Williams. This is the song that I think you'll know.
Oh my God, this is killing me. This is hysterical.
I'll sing it. Wait, hold on. Let me see. It's
I want you back. Want you back. Want you back.
Oh, wait.
Whatever I see, whatever I did, I didn't mean it.
No.
Yes, that's.
Yes. 1,000%. It is essentially like their New Kids on the Block. It's like their Backstreet Boy, but like a little bit older. But it's their New Kids on the Block. That's, I think, what the equivalent is. And like,
I didn't mean it.
Yes.
I just want you back for good. Want back. You back.
Want you
want
back.
You back. I want you back for good.
Yes. Well,
actually, I would be psyched. I love that.
We
song.
Didn't know, but we didn't know who they were. And then all of a sudden it came on and I was like, I know it. This has been in some. Exactly.
Just give me a kitchen, I'll clean it. I just want you back for good. Want you back.
Is that your
I don't
dream?
Know the lyrics, totally.
Is that your dream? Is if you have a kitchen, I'll clean it. Is you're like, well, that's actually my kink.
If you have a kitchen, I'll clean it. I just want you back for good. That would work on me.
Oh my God, I love it. You're like, that would definitely. That's the way to Quinn's heart. Clean her fucking kitchen. I have to say a shout out to my mom who just texted me last night and she goes, hey, I want to give it a fucking reading. The hair looks amazing. I want to give it an exact quote because that's what my mom deserves. And she goes, what'd she say? Oh, God, what was it? She goes, happy to hear you were a prude in high school! Exclamation point.
Oh, great.
Hey, mom, I did it for you.
God, I wonder why my parents didn't text me about me talking about giving blowjobs in high school. I didn't, you guys. Relax. Probably didn't know what a blowjob was in high school. Okay. Can I tell you something?
God, so good. Yeah.
My friend Lucy that I grew up with, that is my bestie, came to visit us and stayed with us for 3 days with her whole family. And we had so much fun. It was the best. And it made me sad because I wish she lived here.
Yeah.
And her little girls are so cute. She has kids my age, basically.
Kids your age? She has kids your age?
Not my age. She's 80. No, her kids
You're
are my 80? Kids' age. My same age. So basically, our kids can play is the highlight of the event. And she has a daughter, Mabel, that is 6 months older than Koa. And so Koa and Griff were like highly, highly interested in her, following her around, competing for her attention, and to a point where one night they got in an argument and I could hear them talking about Cole was like, Mabel's going to be my girlfriend. And Griff was like, Mabel's going to be my girlfriend, Koa. And Koa goes, Griff, Mabel does not want to be your girlfriend.
Oh my God,
and Griff goes, Koa,
I've got a lot of teeth that are white.
So he knows what women want, you know? I was like, you know, Griff, you do. You have so many teeth that are white. And if she can't see that,
if she can't she's a fool. See that, she's an idiot. But I would never, she actually would never say that about Mabel. I would never say that Mabel's an idiot. What I do want to highlight,
because she's really smart.
She's really smart. But what I did want to notice is that you took them to our favorite place to take guests when they're visiting the city is Dumbo.
They took a salsa lesson that happened to be happening that was free.
That was salsa insane. Dance.
And then when we left, they kept practicing and salsa dancing all over Dumbo. And everyone, like, they were making everyone's night. Like, all the adults in the world that came across them that night had, like, a feeling, you know?
Because
there was, like, a guy watching them who was trying to be romantic with the girl he was on a date. Maybe he was, I don't know how long they'd been dating. You couldn't get the vibe on that. He was with a girl and like trying to be like, look at the kids dancing. Should we dance? Like you could tell it was like, this is so romantic. And she was not having it. Oh. But they were amazing.
It sounds like
amazing.
He likes kids, in which case I'm in. Sign me up.
How much does he like kids is
the issue. Question. Is actually the more pressing issue.
We just want to know. We're curious. Is it a true crime waiting to happen? Yeah, they had such a good time. They got to see my kids off fireworks for the first time at Coney Island.
And didn't Co ask something insane like, why is everybody dying?
He was talking about the fireworks. He was like, why are they all dying? Because I think that they started doing the ones that are like, they make that noise. It does sound like they're dying. Yeah. And I was like, I think it's fine, Koa.
Koa, grow up. Is that what you said?
Come on, grow up.
So since we spoke last, I finished the touring part of my show and I only have 3 more shows left here in London.
Bless. How does that feel?
It feels fucking crazy. It feels like this week is going to feel like the longest. It's just crazy that I just was on the road for 10 weeks and I'm going to have been touring. I'm going to be on the road for like 12 weeks. Like it all feels really fucking crazy. It feels like, what is my life? Where am I? Who am I? And I'm like, you know, the roller coaster of this has been lots of highs, lots of lows, and just taking the journey in between. But the idea, I also have like horrible allergies right now. So I feel like I've been singing as Celine Dion in my show and I'm like, I don't sound as good as Celine, unfortunately. I mean, I never did sound as good as Celine, to be fair, but
I've had a very theatrical weekend myself. I saw 2 shows, which, as you know me, sounds crazy.
It's extravagant. What an extravagant.
I went to a Broadway show.
Which one?
I went to the new Sleep No More called Life and Trust.
How was it?
It was Sleep No More, but more. It felt like the producers of that, which are the name of the company's immersive. I feel like they were like, people love Sleep No More. Let's make it.
But better?
You know, more. Like, more everything. Like, bigger, crazier set.
How is that
bigger, crazier beginning, bigger, crazier ending. Masks, but crazier masks. Like, literally every single thing they do in Sleep No More, they do in this. And they just, like,
up
are like,
ante.
Turn it up to an 11.
Who's like you funding walk in, that? It's the question I have.
Oh, my God. It was the place. First of all, can I tell you the address of the theater? Because it's worth repeating.
Yeah.
So it's in Fidei because it's Faust-based, and it's supposed to be, like, a meditation on selling your soul to the devil for money and success. And great place to set it is Fidei, the financial district. Even better place to set it. How did they get this address? It is real. 69 Beaver Street. Legitimately. Like, got to type it into the Google Maps to find the theater and was thrilled. Like, was like, I guess the experience has already started. And then when you walk in, like, you get to go in this beautiful room that it's like murals on the wall, and they're like, you're a valued customer at our bank, we're so glad you're banking with Life and Trust. The board captain, that's not what he's called at all,
the
for sure
captain, we'll meet, yes of course
the board my captain favorite, will
my,
meet you
my
soon
favorite
but the board Carrie captain. You're gonna die, so it's an expensive ticket. But once you get in that room, there's a middle area, you're standing at all these fancy tables and you can go get a cocktail or whatever while you wait, but then there's just trays
past apps
of basically Trader Joe's apps that just keep getting refilled, and they have pigs in a blanket, mini quiche, a little beet relish, and it just keeps getting replenished. And if you're me, you're like, this ticket was so expensive, this actually has to be dinner. So I was like, how many pigs in a blanket is a hot dog is the question. Like, what's too many pigs in a blanket to eat was the meditation. Like,
you got to either avoid that girl over there in the side pony or with the bright lip, or go right for her because she's going to chase you if you don't go to her.
No. It was better. They were set down on like a really pretty thing. And I was next to it. So people couldn't even tell how weird I was being, because a lot of people's tables were like far away from it, where I'm like, ooh, every time you make a decision to get more, it's like a decision. I'm next to it. I can reach it by stretching my arm a little from my table. I had eight pigs in a blanket.
You had eight pigs in a blanket?
I had eight pigs in a blanket and 10 quiches because they're healthy. 10 quiches felt right for the health factor. I think there was a vegetable in it.
You're fine. You're fine.
I was just trying to get my veggies.
You had to do it. You just had to do it. I saw a show yesterday called Standing on the Sky's Edge, which was a cool new musical. But what I'm really excited about is I'm going to the Globe tomorrow to see an all-female version of Richard III, which will be fun. And then I'm really excited because after we close the show on Saturday, I'm seeing ABBA Voyage.
Whoa, fun. That's like something you would see on a cruise, by the way. That sounds great.
What's amazing is they're holograms. It's holograms of ABBA.
Oh, of course it is. Listen, this is very good.
And I'm just
going to
be
epic.
My fucking face off.
She was a dancing queen.
Clap, clap.
Watching holograms.
When do you leave for vacation?
Saturday, the day after tomorrow.
Oh my God.
Goodbye.
Oh my God, I'm so excited for you.
No, you're not. You can't imagine. I'm so excited. It's going to be the best week of my life. No pressure. Do you want to sing songs?
I think we
to
have
people?
To sing songs to people.
Fine, let's sing one to Cora.
Cora.
I knew you were going to do Cora Curly.
Curly. Cora. Not a Cora line, but you're so fine. A Cora, you are a dime piece. We love you so. Not fleecing you because you earned your spot on Patreon because you are at a salon of fun.
Fun. That's right, because Cora, you're not a Bora. When we see you, we want to dance Bora. Bahora. Okay, let's sing to Soleil.
Soleil?
I pronounce this name incorrectly on purpose because I don't know how to pronounce it correctly.
I think it's Soleil.
Soleil.
Soleil, are you from the movie Idea of You with Anne Hathaway about a woman who falls in love with a rock star? But your name is Soleil, or as Quinn says, it's Soleil, because you're as bright as the sun.
Soleil, do you like it when we do fillet? Click, clop, clip, clop, that was a horse. Soleil, do you like it when we do Foley? By Foley, I mean Foley. This is part of my mispronunciation.
I thought you said Foley like a meat, and I got really confused when you started clip-clopping like a horse in the shoes. But that's okay because, Soleil, you're a muse to us. Soleil, you are a star like the sun. Like the sun.
Okay.
Quinn and I are very good at really good at explaining the jokes, which I love. Okay. It's 180. So that means I go first.
First.
Okay. I got this information from the New York Times, The Guardian, ABC. Oh, by the way, should I have just said, hey, let's hear from people who pay us.
Hey, you're listening to Truly.
Darkly.
Creeply. This is Carrie about to tell a story.
And that's
this
Quinn
is Quinn
about
to not.
Okay, so I got this information from the New York Times, The Guardian, ABC, CBS, or as I put it, Cubs, People, and Rolling Stones. The Rolling Stones.
That's enough.
The Rolling Stones, no. But Rolling Stone magazine, yes. It is.
The Rolling Stones told me this.
Mick Jagger, he called me up and he was like, hey, girl. I got to talk to you about something. Okay, so it is 2016, and Bianca Rudolph and her husband, Lawrence, let's call him Larry, because you know that's a short, I don't know if you know that Larry is short for Lawrence. It's not like you have a parent named Lawrence.
Not if you're Larry Posner, then your name is just...
Larry?
Larry.
I like that about our parents, because my dad's name is just Harry, And everybody thinks it's like short for Harold or Henry or something. He's like, no, it's just Harry.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And your dad is just Larry. I like it.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's 2016 and Bianca Rudolph is going going on a trip with her husband, Larry Lawrence. He's a dentist from Greenberg, Pennsylvania. He's in his 60s. She's 56 years old. They have two kids. They're older. They're getting new hobbies. Listen, I don't like this hobby. This hobby freaks me out. But I got to tell you, this is what their hobby is. They're big game hunters. I'm going to say it. Gross. Okay. I also have to just acknowledge that he's a dentist and is into big game hunting, which I don't. I could have looked this up, but wasn't Cecil the lion that was killed, wasn't he killed also by a dentist?
I think a lot of dentists are big game hunters.
I don't know why.
There was something, oh my God, what is the movie I watched recently where, Babes.
Oh, yeah.
Babes?
Yeah.
There's a line in that where this woman is like, well, we need like a dentist for this spot and they might choose you because all good-looking dentists are also murderers, which is true.
Dentists are, oh, shit. Okay.
Dentists are killers.
This is like, oh, fuck, spoiler alert, Quinn.
Well, it does. I don't even know the story, and I can tell you if there's a dentist in it, he's a murderer.
He's a fucking murderer. Well, he's a murderer of animals. We know that to be the truth. So him and his wife of 34 years, again, they have two adult kids. They're deciding to go to a trip to Zambia to go do some big game hunting. Apparently, Bianca wants to add a leopard to her trophy collection.
Can you blame her?
Lesai.
They're beautiful.
Lesai. So they go to this national park in Zambia, which I guess is like around the size of New Jersey. That's actually not important. But while they're there, they do the whole thing where they have a hunting guide. They have a game scout. Because you know what? If you're a big game hunter, you like really... I don't understand the art of it because you're just paying money to go shoot something. It feels so weird to me. I'm like, when I meet people who hunt here and are hunting deer or pheasants or things like that, it's like they're doing a deer blind and they're... tracking a deer. There's like an actual hunt to it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And they're consuming the meat that they eat, that they shoot, which, you know.
Well, it's like a real fisherman versus going to a very, very stocked pond where you're like, I just want the feeling of catching the fish, like the end. I don't want to do all the stuff that leads up.
Yeah.
It's just lazy.
You know, it's an interesting hobby. It's like a half a hobby. It's like, hi, like I don't get it. Okay. So she goes to Zambia. They have this trip. It's October 11th, 2016. It's the last day of their trip. They're headed home tomorrow. The guide and the scout hear a gunshot in the cabin that have Larry and Bianca in it. They run to the cabin and they find Bianca there bleeding from the left side of her chest. Lawrence is in the room with her and he's like, oh my God, her gun went off. She was putting her gun away. And this is a 12-gauge shotgun. It went off by accident as she was packing it away, and it shot her in the heart, and she dies. Authorities on the scene come and investigate, obviously, it's Zambia, and they're like, listen, the firearm was probably loaded from the previous hunting trip that they went on, and while normal safety precautions were not fulfilled, it seems like it did accidentally fire. And so he's in there, he has to talk to the U.S. embassy, right? Like there's like a lot of rigmarole because he's in another country. He does ask the U.S. embassy, what's like Zambia's privacy laws, and like kind of like what's the deal, you know? It's kind of like some weird questions. And so when they're investigating this, they're like taking photos or figuring all this out, Zambia, the U.S. officials reach out to the FBI and they're like, hey, I got like kind of like a weird feeling about this. It does seem like an accident. We're not sure what happened. And then he does another really weird thing, which is he's like, hey, listen, we should cremate her here in Zambia before I take her home, because it's just going to be a pain in the ass to transport a human body, which would make sense. However, you're a big game hunter. You are quite used to transferring like foreign exotic animals to your home country. Okay. Like,
why not your wife?
Why not your fucking wife? It's like you've done this process because it's like pretty intensive. It's expensive. It's a lot of paperwork. It's a huge bureaucratic process. But you've done this previously, yet for your wife's body, for your two children at home to possibly see their mother, or like, you know, I don't know, just. And also, she's Catholic. So, like, maybe mm-hmm. she didn't necessarily want to be cremated. Her desire at end of life, I'm not totally sure. But a lot of people raised a flag and was like, this feels really weird. You're never going to believe this. This is wild. He also receives a huge life insurance payout. Up to, like,
wacky.
$5 million, which, coincidentally enough, within the last year, he re-upped. U.S. Embassy gets a call also around this time from a friend of hers and is like, hey, I think you should investigate this because, again, she was Catholic. I don't think she wanted to be I don't think she wanted to be cremated. And I don't know if the marriage was that good. And so when they start to dig in, this is 2016, they start to, like, build the case. Now, her body is already cremated, so they don't have a body. They have just, like, the photo evidence, all of that stuff. So while they dig into him, they find out that he was having an affair with the manager of his dentistry practice, Lori Milliron. Lori Milliron. Too many I's, too many L's. Right after his wife dies, he returns. He buys Lori a ticket to fly from Pittsburgh to Arizona, which is interesting because he had his practice in Pittsburgh, but recently him and Bianca bought a place in Arizona. So after Bianca dies, he tries to fly his mistress out. Then the ticket is canceled and he gets another ticket for this woman to fly to Vegas where he gets a hotel room. So, like, it's very clear right after he's, like, moving on with this woman that's not his.
And he's like, I want to see you. What's the way to do it?
Exactly. Maybe you shouldn't come to Arizona a couple days after I returned from my wife's tragic, quote, accidental death. He also gets this huge payout, this $5 million payout, and he uses the money to build a home in both Arizona and Pennsylvania. He also buys luxury cars immediately, which just feels like, I mean, I'm not one to sit there and point fingers at, you know, how people mourn or grieve, but, like, that just feels like, do you feel like you won the lottery? Because I don't think that's how that works. There's also some evidence that in the subdivision, when Lori, like, moved into the home that he shared with his deceased wife, that mm-hmm. they actually tried to buy another home in the same subdivision for, like, $3.5 million. Later, he will say that Bianca knew of the affair, so, like, that motive maybe isn't as strong. And a friend will later say that Larry was never going to divorce Bianca because he was more worried. Later, a friend would say that Larry was never going to divorce Bianca to be with Lori because if he had divorced Bianca, he was with her again for 34 years and he built up quite a lot of money from his dentistry practice. And so if he divorced her, she would take all the money. And Bianca was not going to divorce Larry because she was Catholic and that was her faith and she was not interested in getting a divorce. So, of course, then they start going into the ballistics. Now, again, it's really hard to be doing ballistic testing when you have just photo evidence, right? Like, how thorough are these crime scene photos? I'm not sure. But based on what the FBI was able to look into, they determined that it was incredibly unlikely that she pulled the trigger on this 12-gauge shotgun herself, and that with her wound, it was more likely that she was shot from a distance of 6.5 to 8 feet away. Now, when we dig into this Larry, we find out that he's just kind of like a fucking shady guy, as if he wasn't already. A dentist, big game hunter who was having an affair with his employee. I can't believe I'm going to say this, but he was shifty. They think that he was ripping off his dental patients. So, like, this is, like, I know we, this is, it's really scary that a man is killing his wife and the mother of his two children. I find this also very scary that a dentist would, like, not do fillings so that eventually his patients would have to have root canals. Like, purposely fucking up people's teeth so that he could have a bigger pain later.
And, like, creating major physical pain for people.
In addition, when patients were asleep, they think that he drilled holes in teeth so that he would have to fill them later. Like, he's essentially creating the problems that he can fill and make money on.
That, I understand that we're talking about murder.
We're talking about murder.
And yet,
that is very scary.
That is, like, haunting me.
I know.
I have a major distrust of the medical community to begin with, and like stories like this do not help me.
No. But he's someone who like is used to fucking with insurance. Allegedly, he purposefully shot off his thumb in an earlier incident on a trip to Zambia so that he could collect millions in disability insurance. So they're building this case. She was murdered. I'm going to say it. She was murdered in 2016. He was arrested in 2022. It took them 5 years to build this case. So he is arrested for her death in 2022 in Colorado because he loves to move, I guess. He's charged with one count of murder of a U.S. national in a foreign country and one count of mail fraud. So that means the murder of her and also the insurance, right? Because like by putting that in the mail, but it's always interesting the like laws that they're trying to get people on, right? He pleads not guilty. He maintains it's a horrible accident. In fact, at the time, his children really believe him. His children are like, this is wrong. You've been wrong. It's a horrible accident. Mom died. It's really awful. They sign an affidavit saying that he is innocent in order for him to not wait in prison for trial, right? For him to be able to come home. So his kids kind of like go to bat for him. Enter the trial. It is a jury trial. It lasts 3 weeks. The prosecution brings the case. You hear all the stuff that I said. His defense, like I said, is that his wife knew of the affair, that the motive that they had of trying to start a new life with Lori is all bullshit. He's also like, no, I have enough money. I don't need the life insurance payout. But none of this is really effective in his defense. And he is found guilty. And I think it's worth noting that his son, his daughter, has not been interviewed or anything, but his son would later say, I did believe in my father's innocence. And then as his kids went to this trial every day, the evidence is laid out in front of them and they succumb to the belief and the knowledge that their father did murder their mother, which is absolutely heartbreaking. He is fortunately found guilty. He is guilty on both counts, one count of murder of a U.S. national and one count of mail fraud. He is sentenced to life in prison. And in addition, he has to pay $15 million in financial penalties. So he has to pay back like the $4.9 million, the nearly $5 million he got from life insurance payouts, plus a $2 million fine, plus $8 million in other assets. So like the stuff that he bought with that initial money, it had appreciated. So he had to give that back to the government. What's also interesting is he also had to pay back the insurance on his wife's jewelry. This is how fucking shifty this guy is. He murdered his wife. The police came, they took her jewelry when they got her body, and they gave him back the jewelry. That's their story, that they gave him back the jewelry. He says when he came back from Zambia, he didn't have his wife's jewelry, that it was stolen from him. So he took an insurance payout on his wife's jewelry. And they're like, that's actually not true, Ellen, to quote Dakota Johnson. No, he has to pay back that insurance claim. Because, like, on top of your wife's death, you're saying that her jewelry was stolen.
This guy's just always looking for a payout.
It's, like, a little bit. It's just...
There's nothing he won't do.
There's nothing he won't do.
The kids would have been next. It's like, well, get this guy out of here.
Well, let's get to the kids. There's a couple of... Their father murdered their mother. If he had... She had a life insurance policy. It went to her spouse. And then, if he was not able... Like, if he was killed, or if he was dead, or if he was incapacitated, or if he murdered her, it would go to their children, right? They would be the next beneficiary of this $5 million insurance payout. Now, when he was found guilty, this money that he has to owe is going back to the insurance companies. And the kids are going, wait a minute. Like, we're the fucking victims here. We're the victims twice over. And it is interesting because, like, their mother died, and that is the crime. That's their loss. When $5 million is involved in this, and your father is spending all of this money super carelessly, he's giving money to his mistress, he's buying new houses, like, that's your inheritance. That's their inheritance. And so they're like, why is the court giving the insurance company the money back? I'm fine with them taking the $2 million fine if that's their, because they have to bring a case, lawyers, all that stuff. Also, their dad spent all this money on lawyers for his defense, of which he was fucking guilty. So anyway, so they're now in like court proceedings to be like, are we the kids, the son and daughter, are we going to get this insurance payout that we were rightfully owed when our mother was killed by our father? That's a little bit of a messy situation. Bianca's brother had said even Judas would be afraid to be in your company in regards to Larry, which I really liked that line because fuck, that guy is duplicitous, deceitful, and a monster. They also, you might be asking, what about the mistress?
What about the mistress, Carrie?
Great question, Quinn. She was also arrested in connection with this crime. She was arrested and charged with accessory to murder, obstruction of justice, and 5 counts of perjury before a grand jury. In fact, early on in 2020, when they were building a case, a bartender overhears her, Lori and Larry, weird couple name, Lori and Larry, a bartender overhears Lori and Larry in a fight, and he says, I killed my fucking wife for you. Now, that's what a bartender hears in 2020. What he asserts, he said, is that people think I killed my fucking wife for you. But what I love about this is that he's like, the music just stopped during the last bit. So they didn't hear, people believe I've killed my fucking wife for you. Now,
oh, got it.
I really like that because that is a fun, that's a fun scripted moment. But anyway.
But that's exactly what it is.
But that's exactly what it is. It's a script and it's not reality. We know eyewitness testimony is kind of fucked, but if a bartender, if I heard a guy say that, I'd be like, you know what? Maybe I would commit that to memory. Maybe I'd write that in my diary that evening. Hey, dear diary, this game, trophy game killing dentist with his girlfriend talked about killing his wife. Anyway, also, I had patatas bravas for dinner. Okay, it's 2022 and she is, Lori is found guilty on those counts, save for 3 counts of perjury. She was only convicted on 2 counts of perjury. I don't know what she lied about, but I'm sure it was a plenty. She received a 17-year prison sentence and she's pursuing an appeal. And also she is fined $250,000. So as of today, Larry is in federal prison. He tries to call his son, who rightfully refuses to pick up. Right now, they're in court proceedings of like where this the fine, the financial fine is going to and whether these kids will see the insurance payout. But that is the story of how Larry Rudolph killed his wife, Bianca, and almost got away with it.
Crazy story.
Yeah, I don't want to say don't trust big game hunters, but I'm going to say it. I don't trust big game hunters.
But she just did. But she just said it.
I don't think there's a world.
Now, where those are good people.
Well, I don't think there's a world that I would ever feel comfortable having a gun in my house. I'm typically like a pretty gray line area. I'm a gray area kind of girl where I'm like, oh, there's exceptions to rules, blah, 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 blah. When I enter a home knowing there's a gun in the home, I feel incredibly uncomfortable. In fact, I got to tell you, I think I might have mentioned this in a previous podcast. You tell me. But in England, I recently found out, and by recently, that nobody can have handguns here. Did you know that?
No.
Did I tell you that?
That makes sense.
We were at like a farm. We stayed at a farm in a little bit, which was really fun. And they were like, yeah, like you have to have a like very special, special license to even get a shotgun. And it's a shotgun. Mm-hmm. Even police officers don't walk around with guns in this country. You have to have like very, very special dispensation. And I know I covered a case where a man shot a woman, killed a woman with a handgun. And it was because he was a police officer and had very special dispensation to have a gun. And he was a fucking monster. That being said, it's like the probability of being killed by handgun here. Like we have been
pretty fucking low.
Pretty fucking low. And we have been warned here. They're like, yeah, like apparently in an area we were in, they were like, there's teens and they have machetes down their legs. And I was like, wow, that sounds intense. I'd still take that over a gun. There have been some like knife attacks and I'm not like, enter me tomorrow getting killed by a knife. Okay. But I'm saying I like the idea that we've been going to places where people are like, ooh, that's really dodgy. I wouldn't go there. And we go there and it's really nice and people are really friendly and lovely. And we're like, yeah. Oh, I never have to worry about someone having a handgun, like someone just like packing heat.
Mm-hmm.
It's wild. Huge difference.
That is wild.
Anyway, I just don't think I'll ever feel comfortable with a gun in my home. And that's my hill I will die on.
Fair story. Fair play to you. Fair play to you.
Fair play.
Let's hear from our sponsors.
Do we have to? What yes. sponsors?
I don't mean to be a Debbie Downer, but what sponsors?
I don't mean to be like, I don't mean to be shitty, and I say this with love. Who?
I'm going to tell you the story of Sheila Davalou, and this comes from Case Law, CBS News, Oxygen, and Stanford Advocate. Sheila Davalou was born on May 11th, 1969 in Iran.
Okay, she's a Taurus.
Her family came to the U.S. in the 70s. She went to Stony Brook. Heard of it?
Yes.
She got a biochem degree, much
Ooh,
smarter
smart
than me.
Lady.
And she's a very good student, but her family's very traditional, and she gets married just out of high school to Fareed Mousavi. They're in New York. She's going to school, and after college, she goes to grad school at New York Medical College.
Ooh.
While she's in school there, she meets this guy, Paul Christos, and they start having an affair.
Okay.
Her husband, Fareed, finds out about it, so they get divorced.
Okay.
But she and Paul stay together, and they get married.
Okay.
So now we're in 2000. She's married to her second husband, Paul. They move to Pleasantville, New York, in Westchester. Paul's working at Cornell. Sheila's working as a research scientist at Purdue Pharma in Connecticut. But their marriage is, like, they're traveling a lot for work. They work really hard. But also, I think that it's just got the vibes of, like, besties that share a house, like roommates.
Yeah. Okay.
It's like the romance is a little bit dead. It's not anything dark or morbid or right. over the top. It's just whatever. And so even though they get married in 2000, a year later in 2001, Sheila meets a coworker at a happy hour named Nelson Sessler.
Oh, Sheila.
And she's like, I like him.
Oh,
so
Sheila,
they're flirty.
Girl.
And they are fun. And Sheila has, you know, this track record of cheating.
Yeah.
So she's into Nelson. What she doesn't know is that Nelson, a year earlier when she was getting married to Paul, met another woman at a happy hour event that was a coworker named Annalisa Raimundo. And they also had a flirtation. Now, they're both sort of lying to each other because Nelson's not telling her right away that he's simultaneously having a romantic relationship with Annalisa, but Sheila's not telling Nelson that she's married.
Okay.
She says she's divorced.
Okay.
So they're both lying to each other,
right.
and they're having a sexual relationship. Now, in order to have a sexual relationship and pretend that you're divorced and that you're not married, she has to jump through some hoops.
Yeah.
And these hoops are pretty funny, which is to say, she tells her husband, Paul, who's like leaving for the weekend for work or something, she'll be like, oh, you need to help me out. You need to leave. But we also need to make sure it doesn't look like anyone lives here because my mentally ill brother is going to come visit me. And it really upset him if he thought I was
wow,
married.
She is
so
an
we
acrobat,
need to.
Isn't
but
she?
She's making him with her hide his clothes, his toothbrush, pictures of them together. Like he's
Eek.
Helping prepare the home
for
the man that is cuckolding him, but who doesn't know he's cuckolding him. But to Nelson's credit, when Nelson then comes to the house and they're having this affair, he doesn't think that she has a husband because there's no fucking trace of a husband. But despite all this happening, eventually Nelson makes a choice, and the choice is to be with Annalisa. He moves in with her into her apartment, and he, you know, tells Sheila, and Sheila's like, oh, I don't care. It was the fling. I'm not emotionally bothered by that at all. But she is emotionally bothered by it, and we know that because the person that she decides to keep talking about this to is her husband, Paul. And the way that she talks about it is she's like, oh, there's this love triangle at work between this guy, Jack, this woman, Annalisa, and this woman, Melissa.
So it's getting a little namey. Yeah. But Melissa's short for Sheila and Jack is short for Nelson. But she wants to talk to her bestie about this, mm-hmm. her husband. Yeah. So she's like,
a little bit convoluted, but okay.
But she'll be like, oh, like, what do you think Jack would do if this happened? Like, she's like constantly asking him.
Oh, my God.
Melissa still likes Jack. What should she do? And like, Annalisa didn't even know that Melissa existed. Isn't that like kind of fucked up? And he says she would talk about it every single day. And she was like, well, Melissa was really upset because Jack is like,
it's like not going for it anymore
romantically. Is it?
It's like me with Vanderpump Rules. I just was like, let's
talk about it every day.
Every day. Just kidding.
So basically, she's telling him stories like, oh, Melissa likes Jack so much that one time she found out that he was going on a trip and then she bought an airline ticket she didn't need so she could run into him at the airport and sit with him on the plane. She's just like trying so hard to spend time with him because maybe he still has feelings for her even though he's with Annalisa. What do you think? And Paul's like, I don't know. I'm really tired of talking about this love triangle at your work. And then she's like, I feel so bad for Melissa. I think what we'll do is we'll go on a stakeout to spy on Jack. And I'm going to help her because she just wants to like figure some things out. Like, how serious is it with Annalisa? All these things. And Paul's like, that's pretty weird. But, you know, how can I help? And she's like, will you get me some night vision binoculars?
Oh my
and he's
God.
Like, yes. So he's like getting his wife night vision binoculars for her stakeout with imaginary Melissa. And she's like, oh, I also bought a lockpick set for Melissa because she wants to break into Annalisa's apartment because she wants to like see what's there that will give her a better idea of how serious the relationship is with Jack, because it's just so hard for Melissa to know at this point how serious they are.
Oh, Paul.
So
Paul, say no. Say no.
I'm going to. And she's like, should I practice picking our lock? And he's like, yeah. So she's like, oh, practicing picking their lock so that she'll know how to pick locks so she can help her friend Melissa, that's imaginary, spy on Jack, who is Nelson. Spy on Annalisa, who is Annalisa. She's also like, do you have any kind of like eavesdropping device that I could put, like basically that could like record stuff that happens in Jack's office so we could hear what kind of conversations he's having? She's like very set on this track. Wow. Paul is reluctantly having these conversations and helping her, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then she calls Paul to be like, I'm outside Annalisa's apartment with Melissa. Do you think that Melissa should confront Annalisa and basically like tell her what's going on? And he's like, I guess, yeah, because Annalisa does have a right to know that this guy, Jack, is sleeping with two women. Like, if she doesn't know that she's in a serious relationship, like, yes, she should know. Also, I'm really sick of hearing about this. Like, I can't keep hearing about
this. Also, Paul really, is like, this is why you have to talk to your girlfriends about this, because any girlfriend would be like, you're fucking crazy. Stop. Stop.
Paul just wants Paul's it to stop. He's like, I don't know why this, like, my wife got so obsessed with these people at work, but this is getting really crazy. Flash forward to November 8th, 2002. 911 gets a phone call anonymously. A woman says that she saw a male assailant running through her neighborhood and that she thinks that he attacked her neighbor. She gives an address sort of Annalisa's address but is wrong and hangs up on them. They trace it to a payphone that's at a restaurant near that neighborhood. In fact, when they arrive, someone had gone into Annalisa's apartment and stabbed her in the face, neck, and chest.
Oh, my God.
And she also had blunt force trauma to her head.
Did she survive?
She did not survive. Oh, God. She died. They find a drop of blood in the bathroom on the sink. And they believe, since it's away from where Annalisa had died, they think maybe it's blood that could be from the killer. It could be like the killer went in there to try to wash their hands. it will come as no surprise to you, I'm sure, that Paul recalls that Sheila had a deep cut that she came home with that day and said that she was from trying to open a can of dog food. When Nelson arrives home, because remember, he's moved in with Annalisa.
Oh, my God.
He is really calm when they tell him what happened. So they're right away like,
it was him.
It's you. And they bring him in for questioning, but they clear him right away because the Stanford police can tell that the security records at Purdue Pharma clear him. He was definitely there. Oddly enough, when they're talking to him, he gives them the names of two other women that he has dated that suffer from mental illness. Clearly, Nelson has a fucking
type.
A type. He does not tell them
about Sheila.
Oddly, about Sheila and the overlapping relationship. They start canvassing the neighborhood to try to figure out who is the person that made that call. They're talking to people to basically be like, was a neighbor, you? A quote neighbor called. They're listening to their voice.
It's none of them.
It's none of them. Sheila goes to Nelson and is like, you poor thing.
Oh my God.
And she's right there to be like, Jesus. Do you need a cry on my shoulder? Do you need to sleep in my bed? And January 2003, they start sleeping together again. And she's using the same technique of, oh, my mentally ill brother's coming to town. Let's clean up. And then Nelson's coming to stay with her while Paul's away.
Oh, my God. Paul. What's 2 + 2?
But in the meantime, before she starts sleeping with Nelson again, she is talking to... She talks to a bunch of other people and implicates herself in this murder before that even happens. Mm. So she asks a couple of friends, a couple that she's friends with, Emilio and Tammy, about DNA and fingerprints. She's like, do they have everybody's DNA on file? She had talked to other people about this fake love triangle other than her husband. And Tammy and Emilio, she were friends of hers, and she had talked to them. And they notice that she's talking a lot about Melissa and Jack. And they're like, what happened to the other part of the triangle, Annalisa? And Sheila's like, oh, Jack and Melissa are together. Annalisa moved to New Jersey. She got a job. And they're like, oh, okay. Paul, meanwhile, is like, I'm really sick of you making me clean my whole house like I don't live here. I don't want to do it anymore, which is not great for Paul's safety.
Oh,
like,
shit.
Paul, just keep cleaning. Just keep cleaning, brother. So March 22, 2003, she says to Paul, we've been, like, not having sex and, like, let's spice things up. Let's get crazy. Let's do a sexy, kinky bedroom game where we blindfold each other. And then while you're blindfolded, we touch each other with weird objects and you have to guess what the object is. So I think she goes first and he does it, and it's stupid because that game sounds stupid. And then she blindfolds him. She's touching him with a few things. And then he says that she goes downstairs and comes back and says there's one more item for him to guess. And then she sits down on him, rubs his face with something cold, and he's like, is it a candle? And then suddenly he feels like a heavy thrust happen on his chest and another, because that is Sheila stabbing him with a paring knife. And then she goes, oh my God, I think I hurt you. You're bleeding. He's blindfolded. He's handcuffed. And he's like, what happened? And she goes, something fell on you. I think the candle hurt you. And he's like, take off my blindfold. And she does, and he's bleeding. And he's like, take off my handcuffs. And she's like, I can't find the key. And he's like, I'm bleeding. Help me. And so starts to try to help him break the chair that the handcuffs are on. And he's like, just call 911. This is bad. And he watches what seems to be her calling 911, but nothing happens after she calls 911. And he's like, where's the ambulance? Call them again and let me talk to them. And she's like, the operator does not want to talk to you, but they do want you to lie on the floor. Like, she's buying time to make this guy bleed out. This is the craziest scene I have ever heard. I mean, what the actual fuck? She leaves the room. while he's lying on the floor and calls Nelson and is like, do you want to come over tonight for dinner? While her husband is bleeding out.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
An hour goes by and he's like, you have to take me to the hospital. This is insane that the ambulance hasn't come. And she's like,
he still believes that it's, he's still, oh, God.
Okay. So they get in the car and she's driving really slowly. Like, she's just like, ugh. This guy, I thought this would be faster. She parks really far from the hospital behind the behavioral health center at Westchester Medical in Valhalla. And they're parked. She gets out of the car, opens his door. He thinks she's there to help him out of the car. And then she stabs him again with the knife, nicks his fucking heart with it. He's like, what? He gets out of the car and there is a struggle between them. They're fighting near this grassy spot in this parking lot.
Paul's he's handcuffed, right? He's handcuffed still, right?
No. He's bleeding through his shirt. And Sheila's like, just stay here. Talk to me a minute. Talk to me. And he's like, what? He runs.
Oh, my God.
He gets super far from her and yells to a resident he sees near the parking lot and another person. They call 911 and Sheila's still there. Sheila doesn't run away. She's like, just let me take, this is my husband, Paul. I just want to take him to the emergency room.
Oh my God.
And the medical resident is like, no, you're not. Like, absolutely no, you're not. They get Paul into the hospital. He has open heart surgery. He survives.
Thank God.
Oh, so my God. So, obviously, this is...
We've cracked the case. They're
like, you're arrested. This is crazy. You just tried to kill your husband. That was so weird.
That's, I'm sure, what they said. And the detectives... That was so weird.
That was so weird of you, Sheila.
Sheila.
But you know what? They're like, Sheila...
But tell us more about Melissa. This sounds so interesting.
Well, so... They drive to Stanford to have a chat with Nelson because he calls them when he finds out she stabbed her husband.
And he's like, oh,
I didn't know that she was married. And this makes me think about my dead ex, Annalisa, and what might have happened. And they're like, yeah, we can see why you would draw that line. We're drawing it too. Let's listen to the 911 tape with you. And he's like, yep, that's Sheila. And they're like, fuck. Okay, let's go to trial, folks. She waives her right to counsel.
Oh, my God.
And is like, I got this. I got this. And she does a really weird, bad job, of course.
Like, Melissa, I mean me.
Totally. But, like, she's calling her husband Mr. Christos, like, and being like, isn't it right? Like, grilling her husband that she stabbed. It's, I can't believe this was allowed.
Oh, my God.
She starts crying while she's cross-examining him. And then she's like, I gotta stop. Like, it's like a mess. In 2004, she's found guilty of attempted murder and assault. She's sentenced to the maximum 25 years in prison without the possibility of parole. They are working very slowly and they have time because she's in, you know, already in trouble.
To build
they build their case for the murder of Annalisa, and she's ultimately found guilty of that as well, sentenced to an additional 50 years. And that is the story of Sheila Davalo. Davalo. Wow.
Davalo kind of sounds like Diablo, and she does sound a little bit like the devil, but she also sounds like someone who is really unwell, really profoundly unwell.
Yeah. What a story, right?
Wow.
Oh, the candle hurt you. What?
What was cold? Was it the blade of the knife?
Yes. And he's like, is it a candle? And then she's like, yeah. And it, somehow it just hurt you, that candle. Like, what in
Don't
the world?
Don't you hate it when candles are attached to paring knives?
Don't
I hate
play
that.
Weird sex games.
That's
Don't
the lesson
do
of that. That's the lesson we're going to take away with that. Yeah, I think that's one of the good lessons.
For sure.
Hey, Quinn, thank you for telling that story. That was fucking bonkers. I think we got to record a teeny tiny Creeply next for our July.
Oh, let's go to our Patreon. I've got some really spicy things to
tell
you.
Let's get off now. Okay, join Patreon, review, like, subscribe. Love you. Goodbye. Talk to you soon.